And thank you for staying till this last day. As I was described, I'm a pediatrician by trade and work in this healthcare center that serves a primarily poor population. They have a lot of disease. I'm very tired of seeing the amount of cavities in the kids that I've treated for these years, and so that has prompted me to try to change that in the population that I serve. I have no conflicts of interest. I am going to talk about fluoride varnish, which technically is off-label. I'm not going to talk too much about the disease. You guys know about the disease. I'm going to talk about the prevention of early child caries. What I am going to talk about, though, is the medical provider aspect of getting involved in the prevention of this disease, partnering with the dental professionals in this room, all of us. I think that it will take all of us to tackle this disease, as you know as well as I do. So as a medical provider, as a pediatrician, I start to see families before the baby is born. So the mothers come in and see me for their prenatal visits, and that is an opportunity to engage them in preventive care. And then I see them frequently. This is just an example of the number of visits that we see children for well child care visits, for example. So we see them at 2 months, 4 months, 6, 12, 15, 18, 19 to 23, 2 to 3. And that's just in the first year, the number of opportunities where we actually touch these families that are coming in for their preventive care. So there are lots of opportunities for us to try to engage them in oral health prevention. Medical providers, especially pediatricians and those who serve kids, are very in tune to preventive care. We provide vaccines. This is actually the vaccine schedule. We do a lot of anticipatory guidance around injury prevention, obesity prevention, and that's really what the heart of well child care visits is about, is just providing families with preventive measures around these disease. So bringing in preventive dental services into that milieu of work makes sense, given that they're in our office already. We also have an opportunity to really get to know these families. We've seen them over time, and they're in there when the child, before they have teeth. And so we like to think about primary prevention. You guys have all coined the phrases, too is too late, those kind of things. And so we do want to try to prevent this disease before the disease starts. So really talking about that primary prevention. 89% or 90% of poor kids get in for medical care, so they are getting that care, and three-quarters of them are getting some preventive measure, for instance, vaccines. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. As of 2012, these are the number of states that now reimburse medical providers for the provision of these basic preventive dental health services. Every state is different. The range of services that are compensated range from just fluoride varnish application. Some states also reimburse for oral health instruction. Essentially, those are the main two that a medical provider such as myself can get reimbursed for. So this trend started back in 2000 with the groups from North Carolina. If any of them of you are here, I'm sure you are. Thank you for starting this trend. And there was a little bit of action, but really in the last couple of 5 years or so, it's really taken off. Let's see here. So this is from the Into the Mouth of Babes program in North Carolina. Their program was the second. Washington State deserves credit for the first, but North Carolina is shortly thereafter. And their program, as you know, is called Into the Mouth of Babes. And they part of their group published this recently in the American Journal of Public Health just this August 2013. And it shows you this kind of this S-shaped curve, this trend. So Washington back in 1998, slow kind of incline to 2005, 2006, and then this kind of surge of states that have now adopted this Medicaid policy where they will provide reimbursement for medical providers. And so we know a little bit about these early states. We don't really know a lot about these latter states as this trend has kind of gained momentum. So that's what we're trying to learn today. So in Colorado, that's where I am, our state started to reimburse medical providers for the provision of dental care in 2009. So we're a much younger program than those Into the Mouth of Babe kids. And in our state, as I said, every state is different. I was just talking to someone in Maine, and in Maine, a medical provider can, or a child can receive this up to every 150 days up to age 21. In Washington state, whoever's from Washington is super lucky. They can a child can receive a fluoride varnish, I believe it's 3 times a year, up to age 18, not attached to any visit. In Colorado, we are okay, happy to be there. So in my state, I can apply fluoride varnish, but it has to be at a well-child care visit. I can't do it at a visit within an office that's not a well-child care visit. It has to be tied into that care. It can only go up to age 5. And for me to be able to do it, I have to be educated. I have to receive an education. And that education in my state is called Cavity Free at 3. And so if I, as a medical provider, want to get compensated for this care, I have to attend that visit, that training, and show documentation of that training. Other states also have those constraints or education. I think it's a good idea. I will tell you anecdotally that as I go and train medical providers, we've trained now about 2,500 practices in our state, 2,500 providers, and from the medical provider side of things, my profession has a long way to go. They don't understand that caries is the most, they don't understand that first slide, most common infectious disease, preventable, these large disparities, and so they really need a lot of education to come on board about their role in this. So we're still in the early session of this kind of change of thought. So I want to draw attention to this study from the groups in North Carolina as well, and I just want to speak to this because ultimately what we want to do is we want to prevent cavities, right? And so what I am learning over time is that step one is to get medical providers to even want to do this period because they have a lot of other things to do at their visits. Those visits are max packed. So to get a medical provider to want to do this at baseline is a challenge. They're busy visits. For instance, in my medical clinic, I have 26 patients scheduled a day. A lot of them are young. A lot of them are well-child. And I have a great low no-show rate. So I'm cooking. So for somebody to ask me to do something else is a lot of medical providers. So challenge number one is to get medical providers to say, okay, this is a problem in my population, especially if they're serving an underserved population. And I care about my kids. And I'm tired of seeing cavities. And I'm going to go ahead and engage in this process. So changing provider behaviors is not easy, and that's step number one. But I want to emphasize this. So this is the folks in North Carolina. They started their program in 2000, as I mentioned. They followed kids from 2000 to 2006 who were enrolled in Medicaid, and their outcome was if that child had had a caries-related treatment over 6 years by age, over 6 years of age. They looked at kids up to 2006, and what they found is that children who were receiving their into-the-mouth-of-babes visits where fluoride varnish was provided at a well-child care visit or a child visit in the medical provider office, that it took at least 4 fluoride varnish visits before you started to see a reduction in that caries-related treatment. So that's not DMFS. We're not quite there. This is a bit of a proxy for that. But it does look like while one fluoride varnish isn't going to hurt the child, there really is this kind of threshold effect that until you get to at least 4, you're not going to see a decline in those caries-related treatments. So if you provided a child with that into-the-mouth-of-babe visit, meaning that they got fluoride varnish, at 12 months, 18 months, 24, and 35, then their likelihood, then they had a 10% or 11% fewer caries-related treatments. If you got 5 of those fluoride varnish visits in, so if you applied that varnish at 9 months of age, I'm looking at the top line, 12 months, 15 months, 18 months, and 24 months, then you were starting to see a bigger reduction. So my point of this is that step one is to get the providers engaged at this at the baseline. Step two is going to be giving them, especially it's risk-based, I understand. There are some kids who need fewer doses, but we're talking about a Medicaid population who's primarily poor, that they need a certain threshold of care before we're going to start to see a decline in their caries. So that's step two. So I'm just putting that out there for all of you who are trying to train medical providers. Getting them to put fluoride varnish once is great, but then we want to push it to get to the point where we actually can partner with our dental providers to actually maybe see an impact on this disease. So what we did in Colorado is we have Cavity Free at 3. This was started in 2009 with a lot of generous foundation support. We're very lucky to have generous foundation support in my state. We developed an oral health promotion program that included teaching providers about how to examine the teeth. These docs just haven't been paying attention to the teeth. How to demonstrate proper toothbrushing for those patients, how to do a caries risk assessment, how to provide oral health anticipatory guidance, how to apply fluoride varnish, and then how to do some parent caregiver goal setting to actually try to impact what those caregivers are doing on a day-to-day basis at home. I always tell my families, you know, I can put on fluoride varnish, and that's one thing I can do to help your child not get cavities, but really what you do day-to-day at home is really what's going to help this program. So this is not a fluoride varnish program. It is their oral health promotion program. So what our objectives were to examine the provision of preventive dental care, i.e. fluoride varnish by medical providers after participation in an oral health promotion program. We're looking at varnish as a primary outcome because that's something that we can more easily measure. People document that. We examined the receipt of oral health anticipatory guidance by caregivers, and then we tried to look and see if our oral health anticipatory guidance were changing caregiver intentions to have favorable oral health behaviors. So this is the setting. Denver Health is one of the largest safety net healthcare systems in the country. We have 8 community health centers, 4 of whom have dental hygiene, dental clinics on site. So for instance, in my center, I'm on the second floor in my pediatric office and my dental colleagues are in the basement. So co-located, not quite proximate to each other, but co-located in the same building. We have over 100 primary care medical providers. They're pediatricians, they're family docs, they're nurse practitioners, they're PAs. And we serve a third of Denver, 40% of the kids, and the kids that we serve are poor. So what we did is back in 2009 with the beginning of Cavity Free at 3, we took 4 of those clinics and randomly assigned them to get the Cavity Free at 3 promotion program. And we said, okay, let's see if we're going to make any impact on what providers are doing and potentially see a decrease in cavity rates. So we took 4 of those clinics, randomly assigned them, and we gave them a training, and we let the other 4 clinics kind of just sit around. Now, this is a quality improvement measure in my setting, and my administrators want this eventually to roll out to everybody. So they let me stall those 4 clinics for a while, but eventually they said, okay, what about these other 4 clinics? So in 2011, we measured the effectiveness of the intervention, and then we trained the remaining 4, and so now everybody's been trained. And so what we did is we took those providers who are in the intervention clinics, and we gave them a half-day cavity-free at 3 training with a dentist and a doc. So we had 2 providers, a dental provider and a doc. And it included a hands-on training session. It was either that day or the day after. It depends how many people were attending the visit or the session. And then we went back and practice coached with the clinics to find what was working and what wasn't working. So we didn't want to leave them with the training and not ever go back and visit and help them overcome barriers in implementing the care. We wanted to make sure that everybody in the clinic had been trained, and so if there were new hires in the clinic, we would go back and train them so that everybody in that setting was trained. We developed a care guideline or standard work about this. And so what that might look like is it essentially engages everybody in the path of the patient. So if the patient checks in, then my front staff identifies them as a well child care visit. I can do a fluoride varnish. They identify them as under 5. They qualify. Then they will collect some data for me at the front end. Have you seen the dentist? When did you last see the dentist? Were there any problems? That helps me know, did they apply fluoride varnish? So then that tells me if they just got fluoride varnish yesterday or whatever the case may be, or at least from the patient report. If that care was delivered within Denver Health, then that automatically triggered it on the medical record that tell me, okay, this is when their last visit was, this is when they last got fluoride varnish at the dentist. So then I can know I don't need to do it. The dentist is doing it, which is better. Then we have oral health kits, and in that kit is 2 toothbrushes, 1 for the child, 1 for the mom, fluoride varnish, some gauze, some gloves, some stickers, and a nice, neat little Ziploc bag, and they're right next to our Reach Out and Read books. Now, I don't know if you know about Reach Out and Read, but Reach Out and Read is a literacy program for low-income kids, and essentially the timing of it parallels with the oral health preventive measures. So a child gets a book at well child care visits, English or Spanish, from 6 months up to age 5. So pretty much from tooth eruption up to age 5. So that was a nice trigger for the staff. So anytime they pulled a book off the shelf to get that child for the Reach Out and Read program, then they would pour an oral health kit and they would put it on the door so that when I'm walking down the hall, I can see them. And if the chart has a book in it and if it's got an oral health kit, I know it's a well child care visit under 5. Automatically triggers me, tells me what I need to do. We capture the administration of fluoride varnish on a billing sheet. We document it on the chart, obviously. We still have a handwritten medical record that then is imaged, so it's a little bit hard to capture data off of that. But we then capture it on administrative billing data if fluoride varnish was applied or not, and if oral health instruction was provided or not. All these oral health kits were put in essential supply, so every clinic could rapidly replenish their supplies so they wouldn't run out and have that as an excuse as to not have to do it. And significantly, our administrative staff said, okay, this is important enough that we're going to make it a HEDIS measure. So if those of you who work in a health center, there are certain measures that you have to meet to get your funding, and if you don't meet them, that's bad. So this was put on, we want to have this as a priority HEDIS measure. We also gave grand rounds, and we also brought a new pediatric dentist in, and the control groups got those as well. So our primary outcome was fluoride. We looked from our data sources if a child at a well child care visit, a V20.2, had a D1206. We also measured caregiver-reported receipt of anticipatory guidance, oral health intentions with a survey. We did some statistics. I'm getting my five-minute mark. That's why I'm rushing through these. And we defined kids. We wanted to know if kids were getting these care. So we looked at kids who had had at least two well child care visits and at least one visit in the last 18 months. And we wanted to know if they had gotten any fluoride varnish at a well child care visit. And we surveyed them for receipt of oral health instruction and their intentions to change their behaviors. Just to let you know, here we are at the beginning. So there were 1,600 kids between 3 and 3.5 that we wanted to measure these outcomes in. We called up a random selection of them. To make a long story short, essentially we brought in 422 of those kids to measure these outcomes. These kids are 3 to 3.5. Parents were 30. And there was essentially no difference between those kids in being provided care in the intervention clinics versus the control clinics at baseline. And so this shows the percent of kids that we sampled in those groups who received the fluoride varnish at a well child care visit. And so there were some children receiving fluoride varnish in their control clinics, and that's for two reasons primarily. One is there is a little bit of a crossover. We're in a town, and if my clinic is busy and there's no visits and they wanted that visit now, then they're going to go to the next clinic, and that might have been the control clinic. So there was a little bit of crossover there, as you can expect. And also, we started measuring this slightly after the control clinics were trained, and so some of them had started to receive because the control clinics were giving it already. If you look at the number of well child care visits where they received a fluoride varnish, the majority were two or fewer. There were a few kids who received three or more. So I want you to go back to that slide about the in-the-mouth of babes. So we wouldn't expect to maybe see an impact on disease yet. We did measure DMFS, and we didn't get there. But at least we know that we're starting to change behavioral medical provider behaviors. So here we are. So at baseline, back in 2007, we weren't doing very much at all. We wanted to see if they had ever had a dental visit and or a fluoride varnish at a well child care visit. At baseline, back in 2007, before the program started, only 10% of our kids under 3 were getting any services at all. Here it is where we made our measurement. And so we, at our 50%, that was baseline, essentially, after we did the intervention of half the clinic. So the 50% we were happy with. And then we went in and trained the rest of those providers. So now kids in all of the clinics are receiving the care, and we're really pleased with our outcomes that over 80% of kids have had at least one. So we're making some movement. We're changing provider behaviors. Here we are now, and so this is just projecting out. So now we know that we have to increase that dose. So the top line is 1 by 18 months, 2 by 3. The orange is 2 by 30, the green is 3 by 42, and now we're starting to see a little bit of incline. What we've been doing is going back to the clinics and trying to make sure that they're doing it, teaching them about this threshold effect, and trying to maximize their getting to the dental clinic as well. Briefly, the red is the intervention clinics, the orange is the control. We asked those random kids caregivers, if they had received oral anticipatory guidance. None of these are significant. I just want to point out that medical providers do provide a lot of anticipatory guidance, even if they just get some grand rounds training. So this is something that is already kind of in their culture of providing care. When we ask about intentions, families say they will likely change those behaviors based on if a provider tells them, knows differences between the two groups, but again, just some motivation that at least caregivers say that they're going to make some changes. So there are some strengths and weaknesses to this study. In conclusion, an oral health education program is effective at expanding access to preventive services, so these kids are finally starting to get some preventive dental services. We learned that medical providers can adopt new practices, that medical providers already are providing a lot of oral health anticipatory guidance, and that caregivers report some positive intentions. Implications are that we need to remember that this is the most common infectious disease of kids. It's been a disease long overlooked by both of our professions, medical and dental, and medical is slowly coming on board. We've got a long way to go. Caries prevention activities in primary care are needed. They're feasible. They're trackable. So this is something that you could do in your medical setting. And it is a way to expand access to those preventive dental services. I want to push everybody who is doing those kind of things that, again, one fluoride varnish is the first step, and getting enough to actually impact caries is probably the next step. And then I also want to, I don't know if there are people here from North Carolina, but for those of us who are working in policy, some of these policies may actually jinx us in preventing this disease. So if you look at that threshold effect, and your state allows 2 fluoride varnishes per year in a high-risk kid, it's going to be hard, unless there are some other things being implemented at the time, to really reduce that disease. So this is something to bring back to your states. And I want to thank you all and our supporters. Sorry to speak fast. I got it in though, and I do. I will take questions now if there are any.
You must have some language and cultural barriers with your population. What steps have you done to ameliorate those?
We have a largely Hispanic population. That's true, and so we are doing a lot of neat things around that. Yesterday, I presented some work that we're doing with families with some narrative videos that are culturally tuned. They're all in Spanish, and they are informed by our families. So we have a really strong community advisory committee, and we've been doing focus groups and surveying them to get their perspective on this disease. And so we really are engaging them as a patient-centered task.
Thanks.
Thank you. Sir. We are. I didn't show it, but we have a caregiver, parent caregiver goal setting tool that was developed, and essentially it's kind of like a mini motivational interviewing, trying to get them to choose the behavior that they're engaging in, assessing their confidence in changing that behavior, essentially making a contract with them. It's a signature that they get a copy at home, it goes on the fridge, it's got nice graphics, and then that's documented in the chart. So we put their goal in the chart so that we can go back after they come back and say, okay, this was, you were going to try to get rid of that sippy cup. How did it go to recount on that goal that they chose? So mini motivational interviewing. Again, we're talking a lot of visits in a day. So to get, that's actually harder for me to get my providers to do than put on fluoride varnish. But I love motivational interviewing, but I think to get a provider to do that in a normal day is going to be really hard. Please.
I'm going to speak to the great thing that you're doing as far as providing books for children, because as you know, literacy is a huge problem among low-income folks in our country. Mm-hmm. I have reviewed probably every one that we can find children's books on oral health, and as you likely know, the majority of them do not mention primary prevention in terms of use of fluoride, mm-hmm. and drink the water, toothpaste, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. My point in saying this is that a couple of us are working on that kind of a book, and we will have it available within the year for 0 to 2 and 3 to 5. But it will be really focused on not just brushing, but brushing with fluoride and drinking fluoridated water, among other things.
That's great. Make it cute and fun. And our kids love books. They're so used to getting books, they can't leave without getting a book. And so if I could make that the book that they get right on. Please.
Quick question. I might have missed this, but I can step up for a second. But can the
That's a really, really good question. And so initially the medical providers, the doc, would apply the fluoride varnish, but there have been some early adopters and some laggards in our system. And in working with those laggards, it's like, okay, what can I do to help you provide this care? And it's like, I just don't have time. And so now, yes, a nurse or medical assistant can do that. And so all of the medical assistants got the training, both about just the knowledge. They're the ones who are most interested because they're typically young. A lot of them have Medicaid. Their kids have cavities, and they're just like sponges for this information. They're like, oh my gosh, I wish I knew this when I had a kid. And so now for those laggard providers who just can't get it done, their medical assistant's doing it now, and it works great. And they do a better job, frankly. No offense. I mean, it's easier than putting on nail polish, right? I mean, you want to have good drawing and all that kind of stuff.
I think we have one more question.
Thank you. I want to mention Valeria. She's another pediatrician. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Dr. Tony Hashemian. His talk is Text to Floss, a randomized clinical trial of an innovative option to improve oral health behavior. Dr. Tony Hashemian currently holds the position of Assistant Dean for Global Oral Health and Assistant Professor at A.T. Still University, Arizona School of Dentistry and Oral Health. He is a graduate of Creighton University School of Dentistry and recipient of a bachelor's degree in physiology from the University of Minnesota. Currently, he is pursuing an MPH degree at A.T. Still University. In 2003, Dr. Hashemian founded Appleton Dental Plan, an innovative and cost-effective alternative to traditional dental insurance plans for residents and visitors of Arizona. Dr. Hashemian was named Dentist of the Year by the Arizona Business Magazine, and he received the Healthcare Leadership Award in 2012. Welcome.